It is Saturday, October 22nd, 2011. We are broadcasting live from Santa Cruz on the central coast of California. This is KUSP Public Radio. In the first half of the show, we will do geek news. In the second half, we'll welcome your calls with questions and comments about technology. It's time now for Geek Speak.
The bandwidth for geekspeak.org is provided by GNI.
Welcome to Geek Speak, bridging the gaps between geeks and the rest of humanity. I'm your host, Lyle Troxell. Please keep in mind the views expressed on Geek Speak are not necessarily those of KUSP. Today's theme is by, it's by Al Luckow. We haven't seen Al in a long time. I hope he's doing well. And in the second half of the show, we'll be taking your calls and questions and comments. You're welcome to give us a call. The phone number is 1-800-655-5877. If you'd like to participate by making a theme song, please feel free to send us one. Hey, Ben, Jaffe, hi.
Hey, how's it going?
I'm missing Al. How about you?
Yeah, I'm missing him too. Is the right mic up? I'm on two.
Yeah, you're good.
Yeah?
Yeah, you're beautiful, okay. Man. I love it.
Not that one?
No? You're on two, right?
Oh, yeah.
I think it's working. I don't know.
Yeah, that's better.
Okay, so you're on one.
I'm on one.
Yeah.
No, you're on zero. Computers start counting from zero, right?
I think so.
Yeah. Yeah, how's it going? Oh.
Oh my gosh, Al.
Oh, it is Al.
Hello.
Have a seat, Al.
I shall sit here.
Some upgrades?
Yes, I have been upgraded. It is Al 2.0.
Welcome back, sir. Al Luckow, media designer and extraordinaire.
Hello, everybody.
Wow.
You're looking shiny, sir.
I know.
Yeah, you just
all metallic and...
At first, you looked normal, and then you turned your face towards me, and I saw the other half of your face, and it was...
I've transformed.
Let's go ahead and start with some geek news. Mr. Luckow, you've got a great collection today, and I don't even know where to start, but let's start with photography, I guess. We'll do a little photography-themed show today.
Okay. Well, a while ago, many months ago, I mentioned the Lytro camera as, you know, a company that was forming, was a startup.
They had a different kind of sensor.
Yeah. The sensor essentially lets you It'll post-process any photo so that you can take a photo and the depth of field, which is the area that the camera focuses on. So, you know, if you're focused on like a picture of a soda can, the soda can's in focus and then the background's blurry. That's
right.
Depth of field causing that. Well, usually you have to set that in the camera using the aperture. Well, now there's this camera that's made by this company. They're calling it the Lytro camera, and the company's name is Lytro. And the depth of field is set after the fact. So basically, you just take a picture, and then later on, you can choose where you want the focus to occur. So it's a really kind of a cool product. It's basically called a light field camera.
Okay.
And their industrial design, instead of using the traditional camera shape with a big old lens and, you know, thing, it's like a cube. It looks like a telescope. But it's in a square shape.
You kind of look like Galileo using it because it's like this extruded, rectangular prism. Yeah.
It's very long. Yeah.
It's long and it's colorful and
those pictures you showed me look like renderings. They don't look like they've actually.
Well, here's
have
a person's
thing.
Hand.
Okay, good. It exists.
Yeah, I know. You always got it. Whenever you see these things, it's like, did you just make that up? You know,
just sketch that. Yeah, it's. Oh, no, go ahead.
Well, they have a couple models, a 8 gig and a 16 gig. So, you know, obviously it's going to be the type of camera where it's got built-in memory.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I would prefer to see something like a removable SD card or something.
Too.
But still, I mean, you've got pretty big sized cameras, 8 gig and 16 gig. So it's quite a neat little gadget.
I'm really curious because, of course, the first off, when you're focusing, this all has to do with the lens space, and you're normally focusing on a flat piece of medium. In a traditional way, it was film, and you're basically throwing an image down, and depending on how your lens setup works, the image will have a focus area that mm-hmm. is a certain amount. I do a lot of shallow focus range because mm-hmm. I do portraiture
right.
work, And so I keep my camera at like 2.8 aperture. Mm-hmm. And that causes my depth of field to be, you know, in normal lighting, you know, about the face depth, you know,
which
about a face.
Which is actually a good tip for people out there if you're taking portraitures.
Yeah. You know, if you keep the focus range on the subject, it's a great way to make the background less important and really bring out the focus of your subject. But you can't really do this with small lenses very well.
Mm-mm.
Because one of the issues you have is you actually want your lens, the larger you lens, the more light grabbing, of course, you have, but also the more flexibility you have with aperture size. The iPhones have a bit of this. And you'll notice that it auto-aperture controls as you use it. So if there's a lot of light in the room, you won't actually see the depth of field. You've got actually, or I mean, vice versa. If you've got a lot of light, you'll see more depth of field. If you have mm-hmm. less light, less light, you'll see depth of field. More light, you might not.
Right.
But in any case, this camera doesn't work like that at all.
No. Mm-mm. But it's ready to go. I mean, they say they're taking pre-orders right now, but I mean, right now it looks as if they're ready to
be
shipping.
Are they insanely pricey or are they just
normal
pricey?
No. Okay. Not at all. They are within the range of a normal camera that you would go and buy that's kind of a nice camera, not even a prosumer camera. I'm talking like, you know, the cameras you might get at Kmart.
Like around $500.
Yeah.
Plus or minus. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's a good size camera. So, Ben, you want to tell us a little bit about how the sensor actually works?
Yeah, it's really cool. So, if you look at normal cameras, basically the way they work is they have that flat sensor like you were talking about, and they just take all of the light that's hitting, let's say, a particular pixel on that array, and they just record how much is hitting, if you will, how many light rays are hitting, mm-hmm. right? So it's kind of
it's a sum thing.
Exactly,
yeah,
right? So you don't get all that much data about where the light rays are coming from or how the light rays are getting to that pixel, right? Mm-hmm. So that's the key. What they're actually doing is they're recording not just the sum of all the light rays on a pixel, but actually where the light rays are coming from, which means that if they know where all these light rays are coming from going into the camera, then they can actually calculate what the image would look like if the lens were a little bit more this way or that way or whatnot,
right.
Which is what you do when you focus is you adjust these lenses to get the convergence of light rays from a certain distance away,
right.
You know, hitting the same pixel.
So if you have a person's face in the what would traditionally be the foreground, the focused area, and mm-hmm. then behind them is something else, they know that the light that's coming from the person's face is hitting a few of the sensors, and they're like, well, that angle of that light is coming from this position, so we know the location of that face. And then at another space behind Al, right now there's thousands of CDs because we're in a radio station, and behind you is thousands of CDs, and the camera would pick up those and actually determine how far those were away. And then using software, it could decide, well, do you want to be focused on the CDs or focused on Al?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, as a simplification, that's pretty much how it works.
Seems like it would be a lot of data.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, actually, I'm really interested in how they can manage to capture all this data. Well, for one, that's the reason the camera's so long, is because they need special lenses that break up the image to hit different parts of the sensor so they can infer where the light rays are coming from and everything. It's not like some magic thing. I mean, you know, the light ray has to hit something in order to be measured, right? And so that's how that works.
Al, besides pictures of the camera and people's hands holding it so we know it actually mm-hmm. exists, do they have sample images?
I don't see any, but, you know, I mean, I think in a number, either soon or within a year or two, I don't think people are going to be capable of taking bad pictures. I mean, or at least badly exposed. I mean, you have every option, every tool available nowadays to fix problems.
Yeah, yeah.
So you're just going to hold something up,
you know,
click.
I was listening to somebody, one of those podcasts I listened to, talking about how everyone's becoming really good at taking pictures. It's true that most people are pretty good at taking pictures. Still, to this day, I find frustration with pictures that could just be cropped a little better. I think mm-hmm. it's one of the weaknesses. You know,
well, it's composition.
Pretty good.
Yeah, you can take a nicely exposed picture, but
the camera does that for you.
Can
basically.
You compose a picture? That's
right.
That's where the art
right.
comes in.
Here's a trick with portraiture. I'm talking about when the face is the primary object and it's relatively large in the screen. Put the eyes about 3/4 of the way up the page. So, you know, yeah, 3/4. And that spot for the eyes is pretty good. And that's the same type of spot if you're doing a body shot where you get a whole torso. You want the head about that location as mm-hmm. well. About 3/4 up, it feels pretty good. Now, breaking these rules is common. It's mm-hmm. okay. But in general, you'll notice that photos have a lot of that.
Well, my mom's technique was always to cut people's heads off.
Yes.
So basically,
the other one that I see a lot is like a picture of a whole torso, and you get from like their belly button to 2 feet above their head. The face is exactly in the center. You're like, right. No, this is not. Just crop it.
Right.
And try to do it with the camera because it's a lot more.
Yeah, just imagine when they release a camera that composes shots for you in an aesthetically pleasing way.
Unless auto crops after factory.
Unless you really want to see the belly button.
That's true.
And then you would be into ankyloskepsis.
Nice. That's right.
Mm.
Your word for the day.
So we don't look too much at cameras.
I have to mention a quick criticism I have about this technology, and it's not something that they're doing wrong, but it's kind of a byproduct of going with this whole focus after the fact. Two things. First of all, you can bring a photo into iPhoto, not even Lightroom or Aperture or Photoshop, just into iPhoto, and you can retweak it. You can change the exposure a little bit. I mean, you're kind of faking it, but it works pretty well.
Yeah.
And people just don't do it most of the time because they want to click, take the picture, and then be done.
Yeah.
They don't want to have to take it in post-processing and go through all of those photographs again because a lot of people just don't have the time or they choose not to spend
it. No, I agree.
And then the other thing is that they have a flash app which allows you to change the focus. So you can actually distribute your photograph and it'll open up in this flash app. And then you can click on the little areas and it'll refocus it. So, you know, you can send it to your grandma and your grandma can click on the background or click on the foreground and refocus the image.
Right.
But, well, of course, imagine, that's, you know, same issues with flash. It won't work on the iPad. It won't work on the iPhone.
Sure.
And it's kind of a little hefty to ship around a flash application.
But this is a new thing. Like, they're going to offer a RAW format of some sort for this camera, and at some point the photo manufacturers won't start using RAW. Apple's really good at keeping on top of the RAW spec, and so iPhoto, for example, normally handles the newest camera's RAW format.
Yeah.
So you're going to see this just be another aspect of image manipulation. The thing that's fascinating to me is that, of course, we could do this right now. If you take a picture with a very, very small aperture and everything's in focus, you can later then mask and blur. And I think, I'm sure all of us have done that, right?
Where
you fix it later to make it look more like a focused piece or, you know, with the depth of field. But I think what you'll see more likely, there'll be, you know, three buttons. You can have it all in focus or you can be focused in the foreground or focused in the background. And that's how people normally do it. And there might be even a dial on the camera that sets that default for you. You know, so when the camera's pictured, you know, it gets processed and printed, it's a certain way.
That's something.
But if you want to go back and edit, you could.
That's something we never mentioned. It has a power button and has a take photo button. And then, like, there may or may not be a knob. I read things that,
awesome.
Like, imply different things. But, like, even still, that's two buttons and a knob at the most. That's really, really simple.
Yeah.
And you're getting a lot of good data, including, you know, being able to infer some 3D data from this.
We got to get one of these.
Well, ultimately, until we try it, we won't really know, but it's pretty fascinating and it's coming and it's...
We need one for the show, don't you think?
The Lytro camera. Yeah. LYTRO. All the stuff we talk about on GeekSpeak, of course, is up on geekspeak.org a little bit after the show ends. In a second, we're going to talk about disappearing things and seeing through things. But first, what's up with Skype?
Ah, so Skype and BitTorrent. What do the two have in common? Anybody?
Lots of data flow?
Well, both involve IP addresses.
God.
I mean, so there's not...
What does my
so
refrigerator
weak.
Have in common with Skype?
Well, what is my refrigerator and my car?
My
They're both rectangular.
Yeah. Skype, of course, everyone knows, is kind of an IP phone and video conferencing system. And BitTorrent, you want to get the definition of that?
Yeah, BitTorrent is a way of sharing files in a distributed manner. So you have a lot of redundancy, you have a lot more speed, you have lower loads on everybody, and you also have an ability to share files without being easily tracked.
Right.
And that's for a lot of pirates out there, like exchanging
Somali pirates?
Somali pirates out there.
Arrgh.
It's really good for them because they have that anonymity.
Mm-hmm.
But... of course, the entertainment industry has been looking, just because they have a lot of pirated stuff out there, they've been looking for ways to try and track these people down. It turns out Skype actually can help them conceivably do that. For a long while, they were just doing IP addresses, right? So based on your IP address, you know, they would say, oh, this IP address is sharing this file, therefore the person who is behind this IP address is the guilty one, right?
Right.
And maybe that'll be... you know, the mother of a 13-year-old child who's pirating, I don't know, Winnie the Pooh. Do 13-year-olds watch Winnie
Wrong.
The Pooh?
Uh-uh.
All right, well, I don't have kids. although it wasn't too long since I've been
Your
one.
Childhood revolves around
Most
Winnie
pirates,
the Pooh.
They did a study, most pirates are pirating sci-fi movies.
Not
it was a potential story I was going to do, but ironically. Anyway, go ahead.
Well, anyway, the loophole is you can actually get a Skype user's IP address without their knowledge, without even being on their friends list. Like, this is kind of an issue. And so, you know, this vulnerability came out about the same time Skype got bought by Microsoft. And they said, hey, Skype people, there's this vulnerability. And a spokesman said, oh, well, it's not a problem and we're not going to fix it. Uh-huh. And everyone's like, thanks, Microsoft.
So you're saying if you are using Skype, the last time you've logged in and such, or is it when you're running it directly, you can find out the person's...
If I know your username, I can get your IP address. And I think if I know your IP address, I can oftentimes get your username, especially if you're online, which is a little bit sketchy, right? So basically that allows you to link an IP address to an actual person who's on that same computer, right? So that's a little bit closer to getting the perpetrator. Of course, you can be BitTorrenting Linux distros and be perfectly legal, right? So it's a fuzzy line.
The big benefit of BitTorrent, I want to always keep this in mind, because of course it comes about all the time in hacking and cracking and stealing, or sharing copyrighted material, which is not actually stealing. But in that space, it's always talked about there. But the great thing about BitTorrent is that if I have a file that I think people want, let's say I've recorded something like a spaceship landing in my backyard and it's really amazing. If I were to put that on my server, all the bandwidth of everybody trying to download it would cripple me.
But your server, not you.
Yeah, my server. My server would go down. I'd get all these fees and it'd be really problematic. And in fact, the server might not be able to handle the load. But the way that BitTorrent works, the more people interested in the file, the easier it is to get the file and the easier it is to distribute the file. So that the technology itself inherently works really well for shared content, where lots of people does not mean the system breaks. In fact, it means it works better for everybody.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a really impressive way of thinking about BitTorrent. It also happens to have a lot of anonymity kind of blocked in. But that's not the design aspect, right? The design aspect is to quickly share files.
And so it's completely been vilified as this evil thing, but it's really just a fantastic technology that, you know, I think most geeks who understand it really, really love it.
It's a good example of thinking different. It's something that seems impossible. It's like getting more water out of a pipe than the pipe can hold.
Right.
It seems impossible.
Seems magical.
The thinking that went behind building BitTorrent was just by some guy. It wasn't like this big company said, let's solve this problem. It was some guy, that's a great success story.
It is.
Yeah. A couple quick numbers just to close out the story. They had a sample of 100,000 Skype users that they used their way of trying to figure all this out on. They figured out 400 of them were using BitTorrent. And then of the users that they verified were using both Skype and BitTorrent, about 52% of them were actually using both at the same time. So there's really a lot of wiggle room in this. Mm-hmm. I mean, you can kind of connect them. I guess the negative part about this for me is that Skype has your name, your first name, last name, and your location. Now, you can always remove
sometimes
those.
Your billing information and sometimes your personal cell phone as well.
Of course, but none of that, well, maybe your personal cell phone, I'm not sure, but not your billing information. That's not publicly visible, but your first name, last name, and location are completely visible, and almost all of Skype users have all three of those fields filled in because they want to be searchable, right, for people that they find.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
So it's a great location way. And IPs basically are right down to the door. I mean, it's easy to do that.
I love this story and the way all this works. I'm just worried that it'll be used as some kind it'll be used by the entertainment industry to attack people who may actually be innocent, as they have done in the past in many other situations.
Al, I didn't know you were actually coming today because when you drove up, I didn't see your vehicle until you turned it off. What the heck's going on?
Well, this is kind of an interesting lead into this story. I believe a Swedish company has finally obtained Romulan technology.
Aha, that's how that works.
Yes, and what it is...
Oh, awesome.
Yeah, this company has created... The company is called Bay Systems. That's BAE. And they created this system called the Adaptive Camouflage System. And that's looks like Adapt IV. So it's adaptive. You know how they always make a...
Yeah,
you know.
Sure.
What it is it's like these hexagonal chips that go on the outside of tanks and cars or whatever, boats. And they're really thick and they're kind of armor-like too. And they can control the temperature of this whole chip, thereby creating a sort of a pixel pattern across the tank. So what can happen is a lot of, whenever there's these targeting mechanisms, they're always looking for an infrared signature.
Right.
So they kind of look out and they can see, oh, that's a tank, you know. Well, they can change that heat signature to make the tank draw a picture of a car. So then they see it looks like a car or a cow or, you know, a little hut or something,
right,
or a couple of people standing there. They can change what they are. So basically, it's a camouflage system by projecting a complete different signature.
Heat profile. Yeah.
A heat profile. And they can also take a picture of what's behind them, the heat profile of that, and then project that.
Nice.
So basically, it's making the tank completely disappear.
So this is an infrared solution. And of course, infrared's really clever because what you normally do in the heat signatures you're using, the radiating of the body is the thing that actually is producing the light. So because we're warm, we're actually throwing off infrared light. Very
right.
low spectrum infrared light, just from our radiation
these
of our
are,
bodies.
These
and
are like,
vehicles do that a lot.
Yeah, these are like 5.5 inch pixels.
Yeah, so they're pretty big.
So you're able to actually draw, you know, there's a lot of these. You can kind of think of it like a TV screen, you know, all these dots.
And the clever thing that's interesting is that the tank's going to make a lot of heat,
mm-hmm.
right? So they've got to make that heat disperse from the tank itself, or it'll overheat. You've got to cool
right.
it, right? So somewhere you've got to be exposed with heat. So if you know what's behind you from your enemy and the enemy's trying to target you, and you can image that and then turn on little refrigerating units on the front that move the heat, that basically pipe the heat around the vehicle,
mm-hmm.
you then change your shape.
Yeah.
I think it's a little ways away from Romulan technology, but definitely the devious nature.
Yep.
Oh, the cloaking. You know, when you were talking about vehicles and then you said Romulan technology, I thought, oh my God, we figured out how to put a microscopic singularity in the center of our vehicles. That's awesome.
I was thinking about power sources.
Well, yeah, there's a couple of things the Romulans had.
Yeah, well, they're very...
This was the cloaking technology I was going for.
Romulans, very mysterious.
I had a friend that always used to insult me by calling me a Romulan.
Was he a Klingon?
No.
I mean, because
he's a human,
they hate
Ben.
Romulans, too.
He's a human. What's the color of your sky in your world, Ben? Anyway, let's move on. You have some invisible stuff too, or some things of sight.
I some things of sight. Yes, I do. So
Skype and BitTorrent have IPs in common. Please,
yeah, right. They run on computers. So Lincoln Laboratory researchers have developed this device that can actually see through walls. And this seems completely strange and everything. But it actually kind of works. So basically the idea is, you know, with just normal light, you have light going towards an object, right? Let's say a flashlight or something. It bounces off the object and then comes back, and then you can see it that way, right? But if you have a wall in the middle of you and the target, then the wall's going to absorb all the light and you're not going to get any bounce back from the object itself. But instead, what they can do is they're actually using higher frequency radio waves excuse me, to get through things like concrete walls and things, right? So they're getting through these pretty thick concrete walls, and about 99% of the waves that they're sending out are being absorbed by the concrete wall. But 1% are getting through. And of those 1% that bounce back off of whatever the object is, 99% of those get absorbed, which means 0.0025% of the original strength of the wave comes back from the actual object you're trying to look at.
Yeah.
Exactly. So
that poor wall is taking a real beating.
Well, if you have like a table in front of the wall and say you put like a frozen dinner on that table, what exactly happens to the frozen dinner?
What if it was infrared that we were doing? You just like blast it with waves.
What is the frequency
there? You know, it's funny. I knew you were going to ask me that, and I was trying to.
I can totally imagine something like, okay, we almost have, there's a table.
S-band.
There's a table. And as soon as they're like, yes, we're sure there's a table, and there's some kind of small object on top that looks like a dinner plate, as soon as you're actually done with that, the brick wall just collapses in on itself because it's so much stress. completely shatter it.
They were talking about this for military applications. Like, what if you just try and image someone behind a wall and then you take down the wall? They wouldn't notice, right? No, this is S-band. So this is like wireless internet kind of range, you know? So like nothing actually harmful. A couple of the problems that they've had to solve. I mean, first of all, they don't know what's behind the wall to begin with, right?
Right.
And so they can't infer what's behind the wall because, like, unless they had a perfectly uniform wall that they're going through.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
You know,
it's
they wouldn't be able
effects.
It could be a cat back there.
It could
is
be
the
a cat
dead or alive.
well, if the cat's dead, you wouldn't be able to see it because it would be part of the quote unquote furniture or wall or obstruction or whatever, because you wouldn't be able to determine that it was
unique. They need it to change.
They need motion, exactly. But actually, their system is so good that if you just have a human being standing on the other side of the wall, just their very slight movements from standing, that's enough.
Especially if they're drunk.
Especially if they're drunk. Right. And the other thing that they have to contend with is the fact that if you're only getting, you know, what would that be? 1/400th or, God, I hope my math wasn't wrong there, of the original strength, and all the rest of it is being bounced back by the wall in very, very, very high signal to noise ratio. And so they've got this crazy crazy filter that uses certain kinds of crystals to get, like, it's an analog crystal something pass filter, and it manages to get rid of enough of the noise that you can just throw it into an algorithm and figure out what's on the other side.
That's really cool.
And the distances of those things from
the
wall.
What kind of range are we talking about for this thing?
You can actually do it from like 50 feet away.
Whoa.
60 feet away from the wall. Cool. Theoretically, they've done tests with 20 feet. But
you know, it's just a matter of time before you can just see through walls. You just have an iPhone app.
Your iPhone.
Can already,
the cat on the wall.
You can already see through clothes with iPhone. Like all of them on YouTube, they have these like little films.
Specs.
Yeah.
Sweet.
You know,
if that technology got ubiquitous, then people might start getting cancer from cell phones.
Yeah. Geeks Begun. Another study, by the way, shows cell phones not dangerous. Did I show you?
Oh, really?
That? Yeah, we're not going to cover it today. I'll put it on the show.
No, we definitely won't.
Not too much.
It's still conflicting. But
Geeks Begun KOSP is supported by Dr. Henry J. Ramirez, DDS in Santa Cruz, specializing in handcrafted dentistry from start to finish, using digital technology for less radiation and offering one appointment crowns and veneers. Information at 423-2447. You're listening to Central Coast Public Radio, KUSP. My name is Lyle Troxell. In the air with me is Ben Jaffe, he's a geek extraordinaire, and Mr. Al Luckow, a new media architect. We're taking calls with questions and comments about technology. You can ask us anything you'd like. The phone number is 1-800-655-5877. Again, that's 1-800-655-5877. And you can ask us anything you like. Rick is waiting to take your call. And we already have calls waiting to be taken, so we should go ahead and do that, I would assume. Yes, Ben? Do you agree?
Yep, okay. I do. I concur.
Okay.
I wonder what they had to say.
From Santa Cruz, Mary. Mary Ellen, welcome.
Hi. So you were talking about Skype, and I want to tell you a delightful surprise. So Skype, many people use Skype just computer to computer. Mm-hmm. But I use Skype computer to phone inside the United States, and it's free.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And I have relatives in Thailand, and when I call Thailand, I have to deposit some money in my Skype account. So when I call Thailand to a phone, it charges me whatever.
Right.
So a couple weeks ago, I was in Thailand visiting relatives. And I sat there and I launched with my iPad, and I launched Skype on my iPad, and I just dialed one of my contacts in the States. I was kind of curious to see what dialogue box would come up, et cetera.
Yeah.
But the phone rang, and a friend answered in Santa Cruz.
It was free, huh?
It was free.
Wait, why was it free?
No, but I'm calling. Hang on a second.
Okay.
Just don't say anything.
All right.
So I'm calling from my iPad to a landline in the States. So I thought, wow, that's strange. So then I launched my laptop. I launched the Skype in my laptop.
Sure.
And when I tried to dial the U.S. number, dialogue box came up and said, well, you have to pay. You're going through Thai. So in the software for my laptop, it recognizes that I'm calling from a Thai IP address and wants to charge me. But in the iPad, it doesn't recognize that.
Do you have an iPad with phone support?
Nothing. It's
just a Wi-Fi.
Going through Wi-Fi.
My suspicion is it's just an issue between the software on the computer versus the software on the
iPad. That's what I'm trying to tell people.
Although I don't
travel, So then I went to Beijing. Mm-hmm. My iPad 2 never knew where I was. My laptop always knew where I was. Mm-hmm. So for people who are traveling in Europe,
get an iPad.
If you take your iPad, you can call home for free.
For right now. It might change next week.
Well, now that you've told everybody.
It's the secret.
I was stunned. So every day for about an hour, I talk to family at home.
That's awesome.
Excellent.
And my relatives in Thailand, what they do, they just log into my Skype account and then call me on my home phone. And we have eliminated the costs associated with talking to each other.
So you mean you just left an iPad with them?
No, they have an iPad already. They had an iPad.
Right. So this is very cool.
When they tried calling me from their Skype account, of course, they would have had to pay.
Right.
So then they logged into my Skype account and
my
home phone number.
This is Ellen. This Mary Ellen. This is hacking at extraordinary. You're a hacker. Congratulations.
I'm not hacking.
I don't know. You gave them your password for your Skype account. Very cool. I think there's actually something else going on here about the way the iPhone's presence is recorded and used.
iPads.
Yeah. So I would welcome someone that knows a little bit more about this story, one of our listeners that knows a little bit more about the story. Please give us a call or email us.
I'm an engineer. I understand the story.
Okay. So why do you think Skype's doing this? Because clearly you definitely do have an IP address when you're using a Wi-Fi iPhone or iPad outside the States.
I think the app draws information differently. I think there's an error.
It could be that the app is doing that. It's also possible you didn't give the app location access. That's a possibility. But the Skype service itself is definitely involved in how and where you are. It should know this. So it's definitely a loophole that they're fixing. But the other thing is it could be a relationship with Apple. Apple could have said, look, if you're going to use the iPad, you cannot assume that they're at the location of their IP address. You have to pretend like wherever their home address is, that's their base, because we don't want you to make it that way. So it might be a relationship. It might be a relationship between Skype and Apple that's causing this to happen. So anyway, I think we're going to go on with other calls. And thank you so much for the call, Mary Ellen. And thanks for the information, everybody out there.
Bye.
Thank you so much. What great way to contact people remotely for free.
I have one quick note to add. When I was traveling in Europe, if you get Skype in the States and you get a Skype out number, then you have a phone number in the States that's tied to your Skype account. Therefore, you can call people in the States from wherever you are. A lot of the times, I'm not sure if they've changed this, but when I was doing it, you could call out for free because you're calling out through the number that's in the United States.
Sure.
And so it registers not as an international call.
Yeah, it's almost like the thing that's more unusual about that is that the laptop was charging still. That's the thing that seems surprised me.
Yeah. I don't think it was the same thing. But also, if you're doing international calls, check out Google Voice. They have very competitive rates. Sometimes they're better than Skype. Sometimes they're worse.
That's true.
That would be Microsoft Skype, by the way.
Oh, yeah.
Microsoft purchased Skype.
That's right. Yeah.
A few months ago.
From Gilroy, Carmen, welcome to Geek Speak.
Hi. I love your show, guys. My question is, I've got a daughter who's got motor skills problems in the hands, so she's always lagging behind in class, writing down stuff, and it's been suggested that we teach her typing. I was looking into this, and there seems to be there's a keyboard, the Dvorak keyboard.
Right.
Where it's, everything I read about it is pros, and I can't find a con. Everything is, well, I do find a con. It's supposed to be faster to learn. You're supposed to be able to type much faster with it, and it's supposed to be ergonomically designed, so you end up not having as much or any repetitive stress injuries and stuff.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about, before we go into that, the Dvorak keyboard, let's talk about how the current keyboard that we're all familiar with exists.
QWERTY, yeah.
The reason it exists, the QWERTY keyboard exists, and of course it's called QWERTY because that's what it says across the top, upper left is the Q, and so on. But the reason it exists, of course, and you probably know this already, is that when it was created, we had physical arms that were throwing up. And if two or three of them went up at the same time, you'd get a collision and it would get stuck.
I saw those.
Right. So, and I think we all experienced that. But if you design the keyboard in such a way that you never have the keys that aren't pressed next to each other do that, you have a better chance of them not colliding. And that's basically what they tried to do. And this is the physical characteristics of that is the reason why we have the keyboard the way it is. The reason it's still there and not gone off to a better one. The what is it, Dvorak?
Dvorak, yeah.
The Dvorak keyboard, the reason why we haven't moved to that is just from people's knowledge of using the current keyboard. If we all decided to switch, we'd be set. If the U.S. all decided to switch to Metro, we'd be set.
You know who uses the Dvorak keyboard, don't you?
Who? Dvorak?
Woz.
Oh, Woz does?
Woz, yeah.
Steve Wozniak does, huh?
Wow.
He's one of them, yeah.
But not on his laptop.
Well, he has a thing where he can change it.
Yeah.
So it'll switch to Dvorak.
There have been studies that have shown significant improvements in speed using Dvorak versus QWERTY, but there also was a very large study in the 50s by the Navy that said that they couldn't find any difference. They couldn't replicate the performance increases. So I wouldn't call it a done deal. I wouldn't say that Dvorak is definitely better than QWERTY. I would say that it's maybe somewhat controversial.
And ultimately, in your case, I think if you have some sort of challenged child, you might want them to use what's currently being used, the thing that's popular, because that's the thing that they're going to be confronted with in life. Even if it's not quite as efficient as Dvorak, you probably would be better served with a normal keyboard and just make it very easy to use. I mean, you can get all different kinds of keyboards. There's some that have larger buttons that you can see the letters on more clearly. It's not like you're trying to get a Mavis Beacon type fast kind of thing. You just want her to, is it a boy or a girl?
Yeah, girl.
You just want her to be able to communicate in a way that she may have a lot to say. She just has to understand how to make it come out.
It's just the motor skills. I mean.
Right.
Verbally, I think for me, I'm going to agree pretty heavily with... I'm going to agree pretty well with Al on this. The one caveat I'm going to say is that there is a lot more stress with having the uncommon keys outside the normal space of your fingers. You know, I mean, the idea that we have to move around for some of these very common letters. M is a good example. It's a pretty common letter, and it's kind of hard to hit. If the student can get past that, I would definitely stick with the standard keyboard. And that's just because as soon as you tether a person to a certain type of technology, they're not as flexible in the world that they're in. And so unless it's really going to be a major benefit, and I can't see that it's going to be a major benefit switching, I would keep them in the space that everybody's used to.
But you may try things like touch screens are really great when you have motor skill issues, because you have, it's a matter of coordinating your brain with where your hand is. And, you know, there's a lot of different things, like especially iPads and stuff like that. You know, you can use them, from a user interface standpoint, it's very targeted where you can get different kinds of UIs where, it's not real hard to touch things and move them around. I think it's a matter of just, getting her to do that kind of thing and then slowly making it more difficult and getting the coordination down. It's not so much the keyboard.
Okay.
And I don't think you should worry about the repetitive stress syndrome issue unless you think she's going to be a writer. Because, there's...
She's going that way.
Well, then it could definitely be...
a strong storyteller.
I mean, that's going to be true with anybody that's been as a writer in this day and age. You really got to be thinking about your hand placement.
Yeah. As someone who's had repetitive stress, don't go with Microsoft ergonomic keyboards, because there's nothing to say that they're more ergonomic. In fact, some studies have shown that they're less ergonomic. So if you go with any kind of ergonomic thing, make sure that it's actually backed up by some kind of research or something and not just a marketing thing. And the other thing is... maybe talk to a physical therapist or look online for exercises that you can do, and take breaks. Take a lot of breaks. And maybe every 15 minutes, if you take 60 seconds of break, it does a lot.
Well, I'm not sure about the classroom, because this is aimed at possibly having her use something in the classroom.
So
that she can keep up with the rest of the class with taking notes.
Is also an issue here, right? A standard keyboard is just going to cost you a lot less over the long haul, even if you get subsidy. In general, it's going to hit you.
I've seen that some operating systems you can switch over, but you have to learn touch typing. You have to just memorize where everything is, and then you can go in and
So you're saying you could technically give her a keyboard for a few years until she's really proficient with where the keys are, and then just use software mapping to change it.
Because the other question I have is, I've also read a lot that it's easier to learn QWERTY after you learn Dvorak versus the other way around.
It may be.
I don't know. The thing is with a study like that is who are the people that actually took the time to learn to Dvorak? Maybe they're people that are better at learning keyboards.
Yeah.
Right? So then you take a person that doesn't know Dvorak and you say, learn Dvorak. And you have a person that already learned both. You know, I don't know.
Yeah, I would weight the study if it were some kind of peer-reviewed study. But if it were just a one-off study, I wouldn't put too much into it unless their methodology was really sound.
I also think it makes a lot more sense to change the United States to metric from the current imperial English system. Makes a lot more sense than switching keyboards. Like out of the amount of just the society would be better off. It would be less expensive and all those things if we just knew our metric. It would be great.
We'd all be better looking. We'd have more hair.
Exactly.
Nicer skin.
Everything would be perfect. The world would be a beautiful place. And we can't even do that. So there's no way we're going to switch over to Dvorak, I don't think.
Yeah.
Okay. Well,
thank you, Carmen, for the call.
Definitely explore the touchscreen.
You're right. Yeah. Now, and you're talking about the touchscreen not just for as a keyboard, but for information passing.
For information passing, for motor skill, working on the fine motor skills, you can't beat it. And the other thing that might be interesting for her is the Kinect.
Yeah.
Using that that game, the Xbox Kinect, it you just hold your hands up in the air and you move them to control the UI. And that's another thing.
Thank you for the call.
Thank you.
We are taking calls with questions and comments about technology. This is GeekSpeak. My name is Lyle Troxell. In the air with me is Ben Jaffe and Al Luckow. Rick Filman's in the room waiting to take your call. The number is 800-655-5877. Again, that's 800-655-5877.
Someone wrote in to say that Lytro, the camera that lets you focus after the fact, has a small picture gallery at the website, on their website. We'll put that up on our site.
Cool. And that's the flash version, right? Where you get to play with it.
I haven't clicked on the link yet. I just wanted to get it in.
From Santa Cruz, Jeff, welcome to GeekSpeak.
Hey, guys.
What's your question about today, Jeff?
I'm like the last holdout in my family to not get an iPhone, and because we're all waiting for it to come to Sprint, and now it's on Sprint, so my mom just got it, and she used the voice recognition to text me to tell me that I'm a loser because I don't have an iPhone. I felt kind of sad about it.
She's talking
and,
to her phone.
I'm kind of scared about getting an iPhone because of the radiation. I hear it's got exponentially more radiation emitting out of it than
it's the same as all the
phones. Well, maybe the text corrected itself, and maybe she was calling you a Hoosier.
That's
true. Do you play basketball?
I don't, but she does have a thing for Indiana, so it's a possibility. Yeah.
No, all the iPhones.
I'm also the iPhones have the same birth, so it might have been she might have been trying to call me a hoser.
Yeah, hoser. That might work.
Yeah.
But
I have one of these really old Samsung flip phones, and I feel like it just by virtue of its age, it's probably doing less radiation just because it's doing a whole lot less work. Is that possible?
No, it's actually probably opposite of that. An older technology doesn't have as good technology, and therefore, so the phones are all about reducing the amount of energy they're using and the amount of battery life. They want to increase the battery life, right? The iPhone burns its battery not because of its antenna structure. Its antenna structure is extremely advanced compared to other phones. I mean, the current version of phones are going to have the least radiation for cell phone radiation. Keep in mind, though, that most studies show that there's no causal relationship. I was going to cover a story today about it. I'm going to put it up on the website if you can read the article about it. There's another study out there saying that there's not a correlation between brain tumors and cell phones. You can read the study if you want to figure out if it's valid or not. But the truth is that the cell phones, the newer ones, use less radiation. And the reason is they want to decrease their battery life, and so they're going to get their antenna structure as good as possible and their noise cleaning up system as good as possible so that they don't have to use as much energy. And the energy is the radiation you're talking about, right? So the better they get at that, the less energy they have to use, and therefore the less radiation is being emitted by the phone when phone calls are being used. So there you go. Your old phone's going to be more radiation than the newer phones.
Let me ask you one more question really quickly. What about the argument that you shouldn't replace something that doesn't need replacing? I need all that.
That's a much better reason not to use a cell phone.
That's the
throwaway society.
The way that's phrased is, if it ain't broke, don't fix it.
That's right.
Exactly. That whole thing.
If it's working for you, why? If you just use it as a phone, a lot of people see these iPhones. I don't think anybody's going to buy an iPhone and say, darn, why did I buy this? Because as soon as you buy it, you end up using all the things. But if you're perfectly happy with what you have and it works...
Yeah. You know.
And another thing is, you know, wait a little while until your mom or somebody else that you know that has an iPhone drops it and cracks the screen and has to spend $200 to fix it, right? And you
got your clamshell. I can launch this thing across the room and it's fine.
Right. You can. Those clamshell phones are so durable. Mm-hmm. I mean, if I were to get my kids a phone right now, if I wanted them to have a phone for emergency or whatever, I'd definitely get a clamshell, right? Because it's just, they're more durable. So that's the better reason. And the idea is that, you know, if we keep advancing this technology, we're throwing so much stuff away. It is so bad for our planet. You know, that's the problem state. So that's the argument you should make with your mom. You might be a loser, but she's a waster.
There you go. Thanks, guys.
Thanks, right. Jeff, for the call.
No problem.
Well, gentlemen, should we take one more call?
Sure.
Oh, you didn't know I was talking to you because I said gentlemen.
Oh, yes. Who walked in? Who walked in?
From Santa Cruz, Ellen, welcome to GeekSpeak.
Hi. I'm calling for the parent with the challenged kid. And because I've got one as well, and who can't copy things from the board and who's unable to take notes as quickly as the teacher talks.
Right.
And she's now a freshman in college, and we've wound up with something for her called a smart pen.
Is it an audio recorder?
It's an audio. It's audio and it's a camera and the pen.
Is it so, the Pulse? Is it the Pulse smart pen?
It's the new one.
Yeah, the Pulse. I have one of those.
Those are great pens.
If I had one of those when I was in college, I would be a genius right now. They are the best invention that, and you know, we even bought our babysitter one when she went into college just because it's.
Well, perhaps you might explain a little bit about it so that the parent who's talking about QWERTY versus so-and-so, I mean, we were talking iPad versus laptop versus, you know, and we just ditched all of that.
Yeah. Okay. Well, thanks. Al, you want to tell us how that?
Yeah, that's the
pen
Pulse.
Works?
It's the Pulse smartphone.
Smart pen.
Smart pen, and it has like a little camera in the tip. And I know you're imagining, whoa, it's got a camera. It's so small. The pen is a little bit thicker than a normal pen, but you don't really perceive it as any different. And what it's doing is, you have to use their special paper because it's got a matrix of special dot patterns. But as you write on it, it's also recording everything that's going on in the room. So you're writing your notes, the professor or whoever or whenever. I use it in meetings now, you know, because people say, you know, all this stuff, TCP/IP, you know, they're giving me IP addresses. You know, it's like you want to listen to what they're saying, but you don't want to have to write everything down. So what sometimes you do when you're taking notes is you make a little star. And then after everything is written down, you can take this pen and tap anywhere that you've written and it'll repeat through audio what was being said at the moment you wrote that. So if you write the notes, that's great, but you can also tap the sentence where you were and it'll just speak everything that was happening that time. And it's also got 3D sound, so you can tell whether it's in front and back. It's a great technology.
So for example, if we were talking, taking notes in a meeting, and someone started talking really complicated about something, and I wasn't able to keep up with them, if I wrote a couple words of what they said, then later I can go back in and just listen again to that same sentence by pushing on those words.
Right, just tapping
gosh,
them. And you can do things like, if you draw like piano keys, you can actually play the piano. It's got smarts in it, basically.
Ellen, is that the phone your daughter's using?
That's exactly it.
Yep,
and she's really cool. Ecstatic, and she's beside herself because it's made a huge, huge difference.
Well, that's a great idea.
The thing that's cool about that technology is that there is a repetitive pattern later having to play back to some degree and fill in your notes, whatever.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
It allows you to do that. But one of the things is as you get better at taking notes, it actually helps you with it, right? You don't have to go back as much and listen if you've taken more complete notes or if you're able to take completely complete notes. You don't
and the
have to
other
use the
thing
audio.
Is if you take the front seat in the class where somebody else was sitting and they're irritated or upset with you, you can just say to them, I'll email you.
Oh, the same stuff.
Notes, and you can upload and email what you've taken audio.
The criticism is usually that you have to use their paper, but you know what? You have to buy paper anyway, and their paper really seriously isn't that expensive, and so it's
you
just
have a laser printer, you can print your own.
You can print it if you want. I just buy their stuff, but it's so useful. It's just amazing, and you can play it back. I guess it's flash file, but you play it back, and it'll write as you're listening to the audio. So one time I was drawing a picture of what people were saying in a meeting. And then I played it back, and I just, as that was being said, you never see those animations where it's like somebody drawing at a board.
Yeah, yeah,
I actually did that
in
real time.
Oh, that's awesome.
You know, it's kind of fun. That's not a bad idea. Thanks
well,
for
hopefully
it.
It'll be helpful to the mom and maybe other listeners who have the same challenge.
Thank you, Ellen, so much. Mm-hmm. And we'll put a link up to the pen. The pen is called what again?
The Pulse.
The Pulse.
Yeah.
sure there's other companies that produce it, too.
Mm. That's phenomenal.
We'll take one more call from Santa Cruz. Teresa, welcome to GeekSpeak.
Oh, hi. Actually, it's Therese.
Therese, hi.
Hi. I have to say, I used to turn on KUSP on Saturday morning and hear GeekSpeak on, and I just changed the channel really quick because I just did not want to hear GeekSpeak. And now I listen to you every week. I just love the stuff that I'm learning.
Pleasing you.
It's so great. But I don't know whether it's not you, it's me. Something's changed in the technology
it's not
in my
you,
brain.
It's me.
But anyhow, so I have a neighbor who wants to get a Roku box, and I have a Roku box, but of course, and you know what I'm talking about with a Roku box?
Yep, sure.
So I'm streaming Netflix, but my 12-year-old son's hooked it up for me. I don't know how to hook it up, but we did it with a computer directly to our TV. Our TV and our computer are one and the same now.
Sure.
But she does not have that system, and so I'm calling for her to see if you guys have any ideas, and I can take my answer off the air, as to how she could connect without a computer. Is there
does
a way?
She have any computer?
She does have a computer,
good,
yeah.
Good, okay.
But it's in somewhere else in her house away
right.
from her TV.
Yeah, the Roku boxes support that.
Usually needs Wi-Fi.
It
all boils down to the Wi-Fi connection if you've got like a real
any kind of Ethernet connection. You could run a cable too.
So she'd need to do an Ethernet connection. But that's not the same as a cable, like a cable TV?
No.
No, okay.
No. No.
All
to her next to her box next to her TV where she can plug the Roku box, she needs to have that little box has to have internet connection. You can either have a standard Ethernet cable, which is like a fat phone line, or it can have Wi-Fi. And I think they built it. They're built in with Wi-Fi.
Yeah, it's got Wi-Fi now.
So
the Roku boxes.
Yeah, I think the newest ones have Wi-Fi.
Oh, okay, they're probably just a little more expensive than the one
that I have. Exactly right. Exactly.
Oh, okay, so
take a look at the iTV as well. The TV from Apple. They have something.
Apple TV.
Yeah, Apple TV.
So. What's that now?
Well, it's very much like a Roku box. It does almost the same thing. But it costs different amounts. And
I think it costs the same, actually.
Yeah, take a look at it if you're doing that kind of research. Thank you so much for the call.
Yeah, thank you.
Hey, I want to let you know that we do have a Geek Bit. I mean, we have a USB bit today from Al. So stay tuned. But I want to let you know that GeekSpeak is a registered service mark of online tonight with David Lawrence and is used with permission, and thanks Puppet Master for its use. This is Central Coast Public Radio, KUSP Santa Cruz. We're streaming and podcasting at kusp.org. You hear the paper? I like paper. GeekSpeak on KUSP is supported by Home and Small Business Tech, providing IT support to businesses and tech support for home computers. Home and Business Tech specialize in protecting data and have been providing data storage recovery and virtualization and maintenance for over 10 years. HASPtech.com.
Hi, this is Al Luckow with GeekSpeak's Crazy USB Device of the Week.
Prepare yourself for the unbelievable astounding spectacle of a lifetime. I'm talking about none other than the USB Disk Destroyer. This USB-powered monster will destroy any CD or DVD you have. CD, DVD, CDR, CDRW, DVD-R, DVD-RW, DVD-RAM, DVD-ROM, as well as old Hoka CDs. That's why you need the Destroyer.
Excuse me, but aren't DVDs kind of fragile in the first place? I mean, can't you accidentally scratch one just by leaving it in your glove compartment?
Nonsense! To destroy a CD-ROM, DVD, or audio disc, you need the USB-powered disc destroyer. It has 3 carbon steel points, leather carrying case, and renders data-bearing services unreadable within 5 seconds. Guaranteed to consume 100,000 discs.
Well, that's nice, but I think when I want to destroy a disc, I'll just give it to my 6-year-old.
Yes, it's crazy. Yes, it's real. And yes, the link is posted on geekspeak.org. Thanks for listening, everyone.
I missed you, Al.
I missed you too, Al. You can listen, you can watch, read more about everything we talked about today, including the link to a wonderful video, actually, on using the Disk Destroyer, which I highly recommend. Up at geekspeak.org. For GeekSpeak and QSP, I'm Lyle Troxell.